Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the At the Water's Edge podcast, where we look for insights beyond the headlines and take the practitioner's view on geopolitics and national security. Today, we're going to be looking at a topic that's been in the news. It's the seemingly tremendous rise of the BRICS nations and the threat of de-dollarization reducing America's influence abroad and security at home. So what are the BRICS countries? Well, BRICS is a loose economic alliance composed of five member countries right now. It's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. It was started in 2001, or at least the term came from 2001, where an economist at Goldman Sachs named Jim O'Neill described four fast-growing economies that he thought were going to dominate global trade by 2050. In 2010, these four countries added South Africa to their group and became BRICS. Now, since 2010, these five countries, they like to meet up, they get together, they talk about how they're going to create an alternative to the U.S. dollar to conduct trade in. They issue a lot of declarations, and they've, as far as meaningful work, done exactly nothing except generate headlines. Now, what has recently changed is that this past September, at their latest summit, they announced the addition of six new member states. Now, these six member states are Argentina, Egypt, Ethiopia, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE. With the addition of these countries, the BRICS nations would then comprise about 30% of global gross domestic product and control about 43% of global oil production. Yikes. This has people worried. Now, the concentration over control of oil markets, that has people somewhat worried, but we've been living in global oil regime with OPEC and all that forever. So let's put that aside for now. The real threat that's emerging here that has folks scared is the possibility that these folks actually make their own currency and drastically accelerate the trend of de-dollarization. Now, what is de-dollarization and why does that matter? De-dollarization is the decrease in the use of the dollar to conduct trade and financial transactions around the globe. Now, the dollar has been the global reserve currency used everywhere since the end of World War II and the Bretton Woods Conference. Basically, every country in the world, instead of transacting back and forth in their two currencies, when they have to do transactions outside of their borders, everyone converts their currency into dollars, and then they use dollars to do the transaction, and then they convert it back when they get when the transaction is complete. It reduces the risk of fluctuations in, with domestic currencies that aren't as stable, and there's a lot of reasons for it. But the huge advantage to the United States with having the dollar be the number one currency that global trade is conducted in is that everybody wants U.S. dollars for stuff. And because of that, high global demand for dollars allows the U.S. to borrow money at lower costs than anywhere else in the world. You want to know how we can keep spending so much? Because every time we borrow more money, everyone else gobbles it up so they can use it to trade amongst each other. We get away with borrowing in ways that no other nation in the world can do because we're the global reserve currency. And there's a huge demand for our currency abroad, so we can print lots of it and it gets gobbled up. The less dollars get used, the less we can get away with doing that. And the more it's going to cost us to borrow money, and that can drastically impact our ability to do deficit spending here at home and support domestic programs and all that stuff. You can just imagine the political turmoil that would come from actually making significant cuts to domestic spending priorities here in the States if our borrowing costs got so high we could no longer support our current level of deficit spending. And I'm not going to go into those numbers because it's going to make us all sad. But the point is, we really benefit from the dollar being the global currency for basically everything. So it also gives us the ability to conduct unilateral sanctions on nations. If you're wondering why we can basically unilaterally say, hey, Iran, you're cut off from the global banking system, and go after like the Taliban and freeze their accounts and all this stuff that you don't really see any other nation in the world doing, it's because since every nation needs our dollars to conduct their transactions with everybody else at a meaningful level, we can just say, hey, everyone who doesn't go along with this sanction, we're cutting you off from the dollar as well. So we've got the financial gun pointed at everybody's head. And that lets us do a lot diplomatically. It gives us a lot of tools on the security side that no other nation in the world has or has ever had. So there's a lot of power, convenience at home with spending, and the ability to support our quality of life and domestic spending priorities, but also a lot of power and a lot of ability to enforce security regimes abroad that comes with the dollar being the global reserve currency. So, begs the question, could the BRICS nations actually pull this off? Well, on paper, yes, but there's a lot of caveats after that. Let's get into them. So there are two ways that the BRICS nations could go about creating an alternative currency to the US dollar. One is using an existing national currency as the new medium of exchange amongst all nations. The other is to create a brand new currency. Let's look at option number one. To use an existing national currency, one of the countries needs to have enough currency or have the willingness to produce enough currency to provide enough liquidity to the market so that everybody else can trade with it. That also means making their currency somewhat influenced by the trading practices of other nations. So they have to give up some control. The dollar does this all over the world. We float on global markets. We've been transparent and willing to do that ever since we became the global reserve currency after World War II and even after we left the gold standard and just floated on open markets. The only nation in BRICS that could possibly do this is China. They're the only one big enough. They're the only one with enough currency. They're roughly 20% of global domestic product. Here's the problem. The Chinese Communist Party does not allow mass export of its currency abroad. They keep 99% of the yuan in the domestic market. They do this because they manipulate their currency to keep their exports cheap. For them to use the yuan as the medium of exchange among BRICS nations, they would either have to accept the fact that they need to produce enough of it and let it float on global markets openly so that other nations can transact in it, or every other BRICS nation would just have to trust China not to do anything wild and crazy that would unilaterally devalue the currency. Now, before you say, well, Scott, doesn't the U.S. government print money like crazy? Yes, it does. But it's transparent about it. We publish what the interest rate is. Congress says what the budget is. You can see exactly what the U.S. is doing with their monetary supply at all times. It's largely independent of whatever political regime is in power. So you might look at it and say that it's foolish, but the point is you can look at it and everyone can assess it and then adjust their trade policies accordingly. You have none of that transparency with the Chinese Communist Party, and you never will, and everyone knows it. So China is never going to allow the type of transparency needed for the yuan to be used as a medium of exchange in a meaningful way across other member states without their direct control, and no other member state is going to voluntarily surrender that much sovereignty to China just to get out of using the dollar for transactions. That would be idiotic. Granted, people do stupid things all the time, but that would be massively idiotic and a huge security risk. Let's just look at the number two economy in BRICS, India. And let's look at the odds of India and China ever agreeing on a currency. Well, one, China's never going to use India's. Two, India would never use China because there's a fundamental problem there. And it's the issue of trust. And the same issue of trust is why the BRICS nations as a whole will never come together and create a new currency for them to trade with, because then every government and every central bank and every political regime involved would have to be completely open and transparent about their banking practices for that currency to have any useful value as a medium of exchange. That's not going to happen. Now back to India and China. India and China are massive geopolitical rivals. India loves cozying up to China. They love working with Russia to demonstrate their independence from the United States. But that doesn't mean they want to be in bed with either of those two players. They have a non-alignment policy going back to the Cold War. They don't want to be in China's camp. They don't want to be in America's camp. They certainly don't want to be in Russia's camp. I mean, these days, nobody wants to be in Russia's camp. Most Russians don't want to be in Russia's camp. There is no way it would be politically feasible for India to accept Chinese control over its ability to conduct global financial transactions. They are still in an active border dispute that sometimes gets violent. There's clashes all the time. There's no way. And this brings us to the most fundamental issue when it comes to what currency countries use to conduct trade with. And that is the issue of trust. If we go back to the very beginning of what created the BRICS countries, it was an American economist sitting in a bank making predictions, looking at spreadsheets. Then a bunch of countries who made the list started drinking their own Kool-Aid and thought, man, it would be cool if we had an alternative to the U.S. Let's go out there and make a lot of noise about it to pump ourselves up. And they started holding meetings. Other than that, they have done absolutely nothing of significance towards making a new currency. They are not a threat to the dollar as a global reserve currency. Now, if we look at two other times that, you know, the whole world or a significant part of it has agreed to use a currency in recent history, we're going to find that that was done by well-developed countries with significant economies, shared values, who trusted each other. And based on that fundamental issue of trust, they were able to then enter into a mutually beneficial currency regime. Here's two examples. One is the adoption of the U.S. dollar as the global reserve currency after World War II, and the other is the Eurozone. Let's talk about the end of World War II. The Allies get together after having just fought a global war. They need some sort of stable global financial system. Wouldn't you know it, there's only one country in a position to do it. It's the U.S. There was no other option. And everyone basically trusted the United States to at least be transparent. We are that, if nothing else, about most things. And we had a well-developed system of law. We had independent judiciary, executive, legislative branches, independent treasury. It was about as safe as a bet as you could ever go with. So everyone agreed to sign on to the U.S. dollar, and the U.S. dollar was pegged to the gold standard. Then Nixon took us off of that, but we still had a very well-developed banking system, still very well-developed legal system to enforce contracts. So everyone continued to use the dollar. Other example, the Eurozone. Europe got together, created the euro, open trade barriers, basically turned Europe into its own sort of confederation of nation states. And even they've had problems. We've seen England leave the European Union, and we've seen massive turmoil and economic angst over the bailout of Greece, which has drastically impacted the value of the euro and the economic future of the rest of the continent. Yikes. Not exactly a fairy tale story. And in that situation, you have a group of nations with, they're geographically co-located, they all have well-developed economies and legal systems for the most part, they have transparency, and they had to surrender a bit of sovereignty to Brussels and the European Union Parliament to govern their behavior to make this work. So we see two models here. One is the benevolent dictator, and two is the surrender of sovereignty to be part of a collective. U.S. dollar, benevolent dictator, global reserve currency, world superpower, era of liberal hegemony, all that fun stuff. European Union, we're all in this together. We're all going to collectively give up sovereignty, and we're all going to work together and trust each other. Both had ups and downs, both had problems. Now, can you imagine a scenario where either all the BRICS nations agree to follow the lead of one, which would be China, and let China become their economic benevolent dictator, or all the BRICS nations get together and surrender a piece of sovereignty, or even just allow enough transparency for them to transact in a third-party currency that they all agree on independent of the backing of the U.S. dollar entirely. Really. We think these nations that aren't geographically co-located, that have different forms of government, I mean, you have China and India. China, you have the Chinese Communist Party, an authoritarian, genocidal regime that wants to conquer and belittle its neighbors, put its own citizens in camps, has social credit score monitoring, and they're going to enter into a meaningful economic relationship with India, the world's largest democracy. And the two of them are going to pair up and take in the account of the interests of these new nations in the Middle East, as well as South Africa and Brazil on the other side of the globe. Where's the recipe for success in any of this? It's not there. And the most valuable thing about a BRICS currency is the headline it generates for news folks on slow news days. The most valuable commodity that these folks have. And if we really want to hammer home the point, if we really want to look at just how ridiculous some of this stuff is, let's look at one of the newest BRICS members, Argentina. Argentina has gone through more economic collapses than can be counted, because if you go through that many economic collapses, your numbers counting must be so bad that no one can trust your data. So we're not even going to pretend we know how bad Argentina's economy really is, but dear Lord, it is terrible. It is so bad that right now in their domestic presidential elections, they have a major candidate whose major policy platform is getting rid of the Argentina currency so the central bank can stop manipulating it and putting the entire country on the U.S. dollar. One of the first steps in that would be inflating their domestic currency so much that they could afford to buy U.S. dollars and transition their entire economy over. So one of the new BRICS nations domestically has a major political candidate advocating for the adoption of the U.S. dollar. And it's now one of the heralded new members of the alliance that theoretically will challenge the U.S. dollar. Now, are they probably going to do that? No. But it kind of illustrates where these countries are at. So, why do countries join BRICS? Well, the very fact that it can't actually do anything is probably one of its most attractive features. It lets countries that want a bigger say on the global stage come to a big party, put out some statements, puff their chest out, make some noise, and not actually risk having to do anything. It costs nothing, and it gets them headlines and status. It's not a bad bargain. I mean, just look at the new members. You have Saudi Arabia and Iran. So the leader, the self-declared leaders of Sunni Islam and Shia Islam are now in this economic alliance together. You really think they're going to do anything? What do you think is more important to them, their future currency prospects or issues in the Middle East like Israel invading the Gaza Strip? Anytime you see Saudi Arabia and Iran joining the same club, you can guarantee that club's not going to do anything, which is kind of the point. So people are scared by BRICS. They're scared of its growth. They're scared of de-dollarization. But the more it grows, the more inept it becomes. The bigger it gets, the more unwieldy it is. They can only do anything by consensus, and even its current members can't agree on anything other than they want to act like they have an alternative to the dollar. Now, de-dollarization is happening. You can look at the numbers. Folks are entering into bilateral trade agreements. They're looking for alternatives. That's not being driven by the BRICS nations. The BRICS nations are riding that wave. They're not driving it. And that gets us into a whole other conversation about the shift from unipolarity to multipolarity in the international system, the potential end of liberal hegemony in the U.S. as the sole superpower, and a whole bunch of other stuff, which we'll have to get to another time. Thanks for joining us today. See you next time.